How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locking in for episode 107 of Locked On Thunder, and we're merging with Locked On Hawks today. Brad, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's been an interesting weekend for both of us and both of the teams that we cover, so lots to talk about. I'm happy to do it, man. It's going to be fun.
Before we start off, you want to tell my listeners about who you are, who you write for, Locked On Hawks, all that stuff?
Yeah, Locked On Hawks is, I guess, the primary thing that we're doing here, the daily podcast, just like yourself, covering the Hawks. I cover the team at PeaceTreeHoops.com as well. I am not a professional journalist in the way that you are, although I guess, you know, if you get paid at all, you're a professional. So I guess this is my second job, to be fair. But yeah, I'm diving in. I've been on the beat for the Hawks for the last about 4.5 years and doing what we do, man, grinding on a daily basis, writing for the SB Nation site, and just trying to, you know, I cover some of the other parts of the league. I write for Dime Mag on Upper Rock, so I'll also do some national stuff for the NBA, too. So have my eye on a bunch of different stuff, and obviously the Thunder have been a pretty interesting team, as you well know, this year, so I've had an opportunity to watch a lot of them as well, so should be a fun conversation.
Good people at Dime Magazine.
Yeah, I'm directly for Martin Rickman right now. Martin's one of my good friends.
Martin's a good dude. Although Spencer's not there anymore, which makes me sad.
Yeah, I was there for like a month or two with Spencer. Those guys are really great too, and Martin's great. So I've had a good experience in I'm like 4 or 5 months now. It's been fun.
Spencer is awesome. Sure. I worked for him. So Spencer is an awesome guy. Speaking of awesome, you want to talk about some basketball stuff?
Let's do just that, my friend. There's plenty to discuss, as we both know.
there is. Why don't we, just so I can make my awesome transition work, let's like talk for a second about, because I didn't get a chance to do any podcast reaction to Russell Westbrook's game against Phoenix on Saturday because I don't do shows on Sundays. So I know you watched most of that game.
And, I did.
You know, I've seen every second of basketball that Russell Westbrook has played this year. I'm sure a lot of basketball people have seen a ton, but just like when you tune into a game at this point and you see Russell Westbrook's gone, you know, he's at whatever the heck he was at when you tuned in and finishes with 26 and 22 and 11, is the first 25-20 triple-double since Magic Johnson in 1988. Like what are you, as someone who is just professionally or emotionally uninvolved, like what are you watching? What are you thinking about when you watch him play at this point?
It's mostly just awe, to be honest. Like, it's funny. I've always thought of myself like a sort of a Westbrook fan, not in a super fan way, but in a way that like I've just appreciated just his motor and the kind of the way he plays. There's some things you could pick apart about his game, but this year it's like it doesn't matter. The negatives almost don't even matter because that's just how ridiculous he's been. Like, I was thinking about this game particularly, like even if he just had like, you know, how many 22 assists a game? I mean, 22 assist games are there in an NBA year? Like maybe two or three, like if that. Just 22 assists, much less the triple double with the 25 and 20 along with it. So like, it was one of the more ridiculous games I've ever seen anybody play, which is pretty crazy considering, you know, it's a run in the mill NBA game on a Friday night against the Suns, who are not great, but still like nobody does what he's doing this year in a way that like, he just takes the game over on a nightly basis. Almost like, I mean, we saw him play. We were talking about it a little bit before we started recording. We saw him play against the Hawks 2 weeks ago. I was there in that game in person, and like I thought he didn't play that well. And you look up and he has a 30-10-10, and it's like, how do you do that when you don't play that well? And it's because he just kind of has this like one man show going in the best possible way. Like, not that Oklahoma City doesn't have talent around him because they do, but just the things that he does, the subtle ways in which he dominates and then the obvious ways, it's really kind of just breathtaking to watch on a nightly basis. And I'm kind of jealous that you get to watch this thing up close and personal all the time because it's really been something to see.
It is fun to watch in person. Mark Stein tweeted on Sunday, he's the sixth guy in NBA history to have a 50-point game in a season and have a 20-assist game in a season. And both of those games came against the Suns. So I wanted, like, is he going to get, like, 25 rebounds next time he plays Phoenix? Like, what is he going to do? They've got two more against Phoenix. And so he went for 51, 13, and 10 last time they played. They played Phoenix, and he kind of went off late in the game and in overtime, and they won. And although I did think that was one of his worst triple doubles of the season, even though he went for 51, he had like 44 shots,
which is so crazy. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is just comical. I know you know that just from covering all the time.
Well, no, I said so. We were talking about this today in the media room, and this is a conversation that we've had many times this year. And when I say we, I mean just like me and the other Thunder writers and the rest of the Oklahoma City media. Like, what is – we were discussing if that game against Phoenix on Saturday was Westbrook's best game of the season. And it might have been. The Boston game was amazing, and the Lakers game earlier this year was amazing. And he's had some other great ones too, obviously. But we were talking about if that Phoenix one was the best game of the year. And we got into the conversation of the 51-point triple-double. And I said – I think the sentence that I said was, you know – I don't think the 50-point triple-double was one of Russell's best triple-doubles of the season. And then I kind of stopped and was like, that is a ridiculous that that's a real sentence that somebody said.
Yeah, I mean, just the notion of that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I've never covered a player like that. Obviously, the Hawks were really fun a couple of years ago when they won 60 games, but it was like the definition of team basketball throughout. So I've never covered a guy that was like even a top like 15 player, I would say. You know, Paul Millsap last year is probably the closest thing I came to covering that kind of guy on a daily basis. And with all due respect to Paul, he's not Russell Westbrook in terms of just the intrigue factor. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just absolutely wild that you could say that a 50-point triple-double is not one of his better games and probably be right. I don't know. It's wild.
Oh, definitely right. He took 44. He took 16 mid-range shots in that game, which is
a lot.
It is a very fair amount. He shot 4 of 16 from mid-range in that game, which is, like, ridiculous. 16 shots is a very legitimate amount of total shots for a game, and he took 16 just from the least efficient spot of the floor. Like, that was just, like...
He's not shy, man. He's not shy at all. We all know that.
He is not shy. He told me the other day that he was shy as a kid, and I was like, "What happened? when did that change? You are so far from shy in every way right now." He said he was a really shy kid. I was like, "Ah, really? I don't know. Something changed. Something changed." Let's talk about the Hawks a little bit. So the Hawks are 13-14 right now. Started off 9-2. They have won three of their last five, though. And Mike Budenholzer, something I do want to talk about with this team. Mike Budenholzer went to a different starting lineup now. He's now starting Schroeder, Hardaway, Cephalosha, Millsap, and Dwight Howard. And that lineup's had a lot of success. What have you seen that's made that work over the last five? And is it just coincidence that going to that lineup has actually brought them some wins the last few games?
I think it's a little bit of coincidence. I think a lot of people locally are like trying to attribute the move to them playing better, which I'm kind of reticent to accept that only because they were so bad for about a 2.5-week period there that they almost had to get better. This team, while I've been kind of skeptical of them throughout the year and I'm looking sort of smart about that right now, they're not as bad as they looked over about a 3-week stretch where they were, you know, one of the worst five teams in the league. They're just not that. I mean, there's too much talent here and Budenholzer's too good of a coach to be that bad. At the same time, you know, getting Thomas Cephalosha in the starting lineup, he's been the best wing on the team this year. And I think for a lot of Thunder fans that probably haven't seen him play a ton since he left Oklahoma City, that might be a surprise to you. And it's probably an indictment on the other wings for the Hawks, to be also honest. But he's been very, very good this year. So having more of him on the court, especially defensively, really helps. And then Kent Bazemore really, really struggled for about the first, probably 20 games, maybe even longer than that. So to have him, he missed a couple of games with injury, which kind of facilitated this actual five-man unit right now. And Bazemore's now back, but coming off the bench, they've kind of said they want to bring him along slowly, which I think is some cover to say, look, Kent didn't play well early on, and now we're going to see what he can do off the bench. He's a guy who just signed a massive 4-year contract. So I'm kind of, I don't know. I'm kind of reticent to think that he's going to stay on the bench for very long because of that contract, but he has played better since being put on the bench, and maybe he can be talked into staying in that role for a little while longer. This is a team that has four wings that are sort of interchangeable, so starting lineup change doesn't really make that much of a difference in my opinion, but you know, playing better now gives Bud some cover to leave this lineup alone as kind of how it is, and you know, the best three players on the team happen to not be wings because you got Paul Millsap, we talked about a second ago, Dwight Howard, and I think Dennis Schroeder is probably number three on that list for as scary as that possibility is. So, you know, the wings are sort of interchangeable, and some of those moves make some sense in the aggregate, so we'll see how that works. But they are definitely playing better now than they were a couple weeks ago when you saw them last.
What a nice guy Kent Bazemore, though.
Oh, I love Kent. Kent's such a good guy.
He's such a good guy.
It's been a very, very rough couple of weeks kind of just watching him try to press, because I think it's pretty clear that he's just been, you know, kind of piling on himself, pressing, almost trying to live up to that contract. You know, you never want to say that because he won't admit to that. But I think, you know, offensively, you can just kind of see he's really trying to be a guy that he's not right now. And he's such a nice guy, such a good guy off the court. And he's, you know, the Bay's gays, all those fun things. So I'm really rooting for Kent to kind of catch that lightning in a bottle again. Not that he's ever going to be this lights out guy, but I think he's definitely better than he's been this year. I'm rooting for him because, as you said, he's just an awesome guy.
So I'll tell you a Kent Bazemore story. A couple of years ago when I was just covering around the league for Bleacher Report, I did this. It was when the Hawks won 60 games and went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I did this piece right at the end of the year. I did this. I think it's probably the longest piece I ever wrote. It was too long, honestly. It got even halfway in. I was like, I am so bored. In retrospect, it's not one of my proudest pieces. But it was this big, big piece breaking down every aspect of the Hawks, why they got to 60. I talked to seven players on the team. I talked to Bud. And just this big piece breaking down the locker room, breaking down the X's and O's of it, why, how they got to 60 wins, all that stuff. And I talked to Bazemore for it. I probably got him. I got him in practice when they were in New York. And I got him in practice. They were shooting around at Basketball City, and which is, you know, this it's not the Garden. It's this, you know, basketball facility downtown. And, you know, he came aside and talked to me for probably, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, kind of in the middle of practice. And just kind of went back to just kind of casually shooting around after. And right as I was going to leave, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, and as I'm leaving, he stops shooting around and runs back over and says, "Oh, man, thanks for interviewing me, by the way. I really appreciate it." And then he goes back to shooting. I was like, no player has ever gone out of their way to thank me for interviewing them ever before. I was like, that stuck with me. I was like, who is this guy, Kent Bazemore? He was great in the interview. I was like, what is Kent Bazemore doing right now? Like, no player has ever done that with me before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, honestly, you know, dealing with Kent a little bit. He's not, I don't know, it's a situation where I think he's sort of he's overqualified to be as fun as he is, if that makes any sense. Like, he's too good of a player to be still as fun as he is to cover and kind of be around, because most guys at that level, not that he's a superstar or anything, but most guys that are like firmly entrenched rotation guys who make, you know, $17, $18 million a year are not as fun as Kent is. And he still manages to be that way, now with the money and all those things. So it's a lot of fun. And I'm definitely not surprised, because I've had the same sort of interactions with him where he's just willing to kind of do whatever you ask him to do and talk to you about whatever you want to talk to him about, and not, as you know, not every guy's like that.
He's got a Steven Adams Enes Kanter syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are certainly more, I don't know if more interesting is the right way to put it, more noteworthy, more newsworthy than Bazemore. Bazemore's not going to really like make super waves, but like, he'll give you whatever you ask for. And like, the Baze Gaze has become famous. That's sort of his calling card now. And his bench celebrations were sort of legendary before he actually became a good player. And he's still good at that, even when he's actually playing. Now, when he comes out of the game, he's still one of the few guys that's like on his feet constantly. I'm like, Ken, why don't you sit down and rest a little bit, man? You just played 10 minutes in a row, and you spend your entire rest period on your feet on the bench, waving towels and stuff like that. He just can't turn it off. It's an awesome thing.
Yeah, you know, Adams and Ken are kind of like that too, man. They're just like, I mean, Thunder fans know very well. And you know what? You turn on that game tomorrow night, or this is going to go up Monday. So you turn on that game tonight on Monday night, and you watch either team, and there's a guy who makes $70 million coming off the bench for both of them.
Yeah, at least for now, it's definitely a weird situation, but that's kind of going to be the norm in the NBA moving forward. As I think it's kind of hard to figure and get your mind wrapped around that. But especially the fans, like I know you, I'm sure you hear about this too. But like it's like, oh, Kent Mazemore makes this, he must be so super wildly overpaid. I'm like, no, that's kind of what these guys are going to make now. I mean, he's not that he's ever going to be a star, but like a good, you know, sort of valuable role player is going to make $17, $18, $20 million with the way this money is going. And yeah, but it definitely is weird to think about $70 million guys come off the bench, but that's the new norm, I think.
So that new starting lineup, have you looked at the lineup data for those guys?
A little bit, not like as a starting unit, but it's one of those situations where this is a group that has struggled offensively, not surprisingly, because you know you have.
Well, let me cut you off for one sec. Because I was leading in, and I was going to say I have looked at the lineup data. It's not an outrageously large sample size. It's 73 minutes. It's large enough to where it's not going to give us answers. But it allows us to ask questions.
For sure.
And here's my question. They are 32. They were a plus 32 per 100 possessions.
I knew it was good. Yeah, I did not know it was that good. I knew it was good, not like that.
For those who don't know how to contextualize that, plus 32 per 100 possessions is absolutely ridiculous. It's one of the best five-man lineups in the entire league. It's been absolutely fantastic. Why has it been so good?
It's interesting, man, because like I can't, you know, if you told me those guys play together, I'm going to tell you that they're not going to be able to score. But as you just said, like the, you know, if you're plus 32, you're doing something right on the offensive end. My concern would be of that group is that I don't know where the shot creation comes from, but I guess at the same time, Hardaway Jr. is probably the number two shot creator on this team alongside Dennis Schroeder. Those guys kind of scare me playing together, but it has worked. I know those two guys playing together has worked well, at least recently. And while I don't love that in the aggregate, it has certainly happened that way. But, you know, putting a lineup out there with four, at least three good defenders plus Schroeder, who can be one of those things, and Hardaway has been improved. That can certainly help you to be better, but I cannot rationalize how they'd be that good, to be honest with you. But most of that, I suspect that most of that damage has been done recently, since the actual changes happened, and they've been playing more together because the Hawks were kind of famously getting off to a bunch of slow starts early on when their actual starting lineup coming into the year was getting outscored by like 15 points per 100, which is pretty crazy for a starting lineup to be just getting killed like that on a supposed playoff team. So I don't know. For me, hearing that number, I'm really skeptical of it being that good. But you know, at the same time, you could easily argue that those have been the best five players on the team for this season, alongside a guy like maybe Mike Muscala. But it's kind of crazy for me to say because of Tim Hardaway Jr. is a guy that I'm not a big fan of and have not been a big fan of, but he's been very, very good this year. So you know, there's an argument those are your best five guys, and normally your best five guys are your best lineup, I suppose, if they all fit together. So sure, talk me into it. I don't know. So sign me up for it continuing. I know that much.
So what are defensive assignments going to be tomorrow? So you're going to have Cephalosha guarding Westbrook.
For the most part, I think, yeah, we saw that a lot in the game 2 weeks ago. We saw Thabo get that assignment because of the fact that they can sort of hide Schroeder a little bit on either Robertson or Oladipo.
Well, Oladipo's hurt now.
Is he not? Oh, he's not. Oh, see, this is what I get for recording a podcast before I write the preview for the game, because I've not done that yet.
So Oladipo, he's not officially ruled out for Monday night. But he's missed the last three and he hasn't practiced since he sprained his right wrist last week. So he's, with Oladipo out, I'm not sure who's going to start. Billy Donovan has made it pretty clear that he's going to go with matchups depending. My guess is with the Hawks matchup, with the way that the Hawks lineup works, he's going to go with Anthony Morrow. He started Anthony Morrow and he started, Jeremy Grant. My guess is he's going to end up going with Morrow in this one, but
Morrow had a great game 2 weeks ago in Atlanta. I think he had like 15 points and made a bunch of shots and kind of had a couple big ones in the second half and was able to get free. So if that's any indication, he did play very well. Again, that's a small sample that you don't want to take too much from, but he definitely lit the Hawks up a little bit. So I don't know. At some point, they're going to have to put Schroeder on Westbrook. That's just kind of the way this thing works. Thabo is a better option, but
right. Russ eats Schroeder alive.
Oh, I mean, Rusty's everybody, but certainly that there's a reason why Tabo is going to be getting the first assignment. I would imagine it's because he has the best chance. I also think you'll probably see Bazemore on Westbrook at some point in this game. Bazemore has, you know, at least in the past, been pretty effective at guarding point guards. Westbrook is, of course, a unique animal, but Tabo's going to, for as much as they can put Tabo on him, they'll probably do that. It's just whether they can get away with Schroeder on somebody else, given his size. But, you know, maybe him chasing around Morrow wouldn't be the worst idea in the world, just because Morrow is obviously have a pretty significant size advantage there, but he's not exactly the guy you would profile as a guy who was going to be able to take advantage of that in a traditional sense. Maybe just shooting over Schroeder, but maybe hiding him on Andre would be something they could try. It's a really rough spot against the Thunder to be able to guard Westbrook with a non point guard, because the rest of your lineups get wonky. But I expect that to definitely be the case early on. We'll see how long they can stay with it.
Yeah, that's where the Thunder get hurt, not having a ball dominant wing. Because you can pretty much put your point guard on Andre Roberson. And it leads to some troubles if you have a point guard who's so used to guarding on the ball that he ends up falling asleep off of it, which is true for a lot of point guards.
And Roberson,
right, for sure. He can beat you on, you know, if a guy gambles. And point guards tend to be gamblers, too. So if he jumps a passing lane, like Roberson has become a better, you know, cutter and become a more aware cutter, I should really say, especially out of the corners and stuff. And he'll beat a point guard when he falls asleep on a back cut or something like that. And it becomes tough kind of when you cross match like that. It becomes a little tough, picking up Roberson in transition. Roberson likes to leak out and stuff. And he's gotten pretty good at knowing when and when not to do it. And Westbrook has found him on a lot of like full court passes that have led to layups and dunks for him. And just kind of, he's gotten out in front of the defense. And because of that, he's been able to take advantage and end up with layups and dunks. He's for his struggles offensively, he's a pretty decent offensive player in transition. Like he's fast and he's athletic and you know, he's able to get out in front of guys, and he's pretty good at filling lanes and finding space in that sense in transition. So it's harder to pick up a guy and get your primary assignment in that sense when you cross match, but those are worth it. Like when you have a defender of the caliber of Tabo Sefolosha, like that's why you have him to guard the Westbrooks of the world. So look, Schroeder's pretty feisty on the ball, I think, and correct me if you disagree. Like he's pretty handsy, but he's like 47 pounds.
Yeah, and he's not the most cerebral guy either. I think actually this year he's taken a step back defensively from where he was a year ago. You know, part of that is probably just the fact that he's playing a bigger role offensively now that he's a full-time starter with a pretty high usage rate. So, you know, the offense for the Hawks has been a struggle, and everything kind of has to run through him. So it's not a big shock to me that he's taking a step back defensively. I think when he's keyed in, he can be pretty good. But I guess a guy like Russ can just kind of plow him off the ball. You know, Dennis is still pretty frail. He's a wiry, strong-ish guy, but he's still fairly frail in terms of point guards. And he's not long enough. He's fairly long for a point guard. He's got good long arms, but he's also not 6'4 like Russ. So it's definitely a matchup where he's going to get killed, and they probably know that. Same thing with Malcolm Delaney as your backup point guard, is that they can't put him on Russ. That's something that I definitely know cannot happen. So it's one of the situations where they're going to have to put the two wings of Bazemore and Sefolosha on Westbrook as much as humanly possible and see what they can get away with. And hopefully, for me, if I'm Bud, I'm going to try to avoid any matchup where Delaney and Westbrook are on the court together. At some point, it's going to have to happen because Russ is just going to play more minutes than Schroeder is in this game. That's kind of Bud's MO, is to keep an eye on minutes with guys. So that's going to happen at some point, but that's a treacherous matchup for Delaney, who is again even less physically gifted than Schroeder and slower, and a guy who you have even more trouble hiding defensively. So a couple of things to watch for, none of which are probably going to be good for the Hawks.
And one thing that Bud is good at is he's always been good at figuring out which matchups he wants before the games, you know, figuring out which defensive assignments he wants to do, figuring out which matchups he likes, and staying consistent with those throughout a game with his rotations. He's good at keeping that. Billy Donovan's actually good at this too. It's funny to say that someone's good at it or not, because like in a perfect world, every coach would be good at that, you know?
Right.
But some coaches, just you see them, you know, they want to get through stuff, and you just see them, you know, a coach, it's almost like a coach sneaks in a substitution and you end up for four possessions. You know, Russell Westbrook is being guarded by someone you don't want guarding him. And, you know, he creates 8 points on those four possessions until you get, you know, your next sub in or something like that. Or, you know, you have to rest somebody because you overplayed somebody because because he was tired, and now he's tired, and then all of a sudden, you know, the opposing coach sneaks somebody back in, and you know, that guy who he's supposed to be guarding ends up going off in that time. Like, that stuff can happen in games. That's part of, like, the, you know, the chess checkers match, whatever you want to call it, during games between coaches. I think Bud's really good at that. I think Billy Donovan's really good at that. I think he's done a great job at that with Andre Robertson this year, when they go up against guys like Harden or Carmelo Anthony, or other guys who they're just saying, like, all right, just guard him the whole time, no matter what. And I think that's something that doesn't necessarily get attributed to coaches as a positive trait all that often. But both those guys are really good at that.
For sure. And, you know, Bud's kind of caught some heat for his rotations in the past, even from me. There's been some stuff that I haven't always loved. But at the same time, like, he does, as you said, he comes prepared. He knows what he wants to get accomplished. He's not going to tell anybody, but is sort of one of the closer to the best guys in the entire league in terms of scheme stuff. He will not answer basketball questions before games for the most part. He'll give the most evasive answer imaginable because he just doesn't like to talk about anything, especially before or even really after. He is not big into breaking down X's and O's with the media. He doesn't like to do that. But matchup stuff is definitely something that he's excelled in. And I think we've seen that with the starting lineup stuff that you said recently. I think one of the reasons why that lineup's playing so well and that the Hawks have played better, especially offensively, is the fact that I think he realized that playing Schroeder and Hardaway Jr. together was something that he wanted to do. And those guys play off each other quite well offensively. That's been one of the better two-man units on this entire team offensively throughout the year. And because the Hawks have not been able to score throughout the season at a high level, generating offense in a different way. I think, you know, the other night, I think it was Saturday night, the Hawks played a lot of the fourth quarter with Kyle Korver at power forward because he wanted to play small. And he even said after the game, he admitted to coming into the game and targeting that against a team like Charlotte who plays small as well. So he has these things in mind. He's very good at sort of planning these things out ahead of time, like you said. And hopefully that'll be something that he has something up his sleeve to deal with Oklahoma City, because, you know, the Hawks played fairly well. They did lose that game 2 weeks ago against the Thunder, but a lot of that was kind of, you know, Russ doing some Russ stuff in the fourth quarter and et cetera, et cetera. So I thought the Hawks played reasonably well in that game, and they had a pretty coherent plan that involved Cephalosha guarding Westbrook, as we talked about before. So hopefully he'll have another wrinkle or two up his sleeve against the Thunder in this game.
You got anything to plug before we go?
No, man, just Locked On Hawks, and the entire Locked On Network. I know you probably plug it all the time too, but, check out, you know, if you have another team that you like or an NFL team, something like that, hop on the Locked On Network and find that team. And we're here daily on the Hawks and PeachtreeHoops.com. I'm kind of just doing my regular everyday grind. So, visit that. If you like the Atlanta Hawks for some reason, you're listening to this podcast, if you're a Thunder fan, come on over. We love to have you.
And, you got to get the Twitter handle, man.
Oh yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at BT Roland. If you like weird college football stuff, a lot of probably gambling talk and a lot of NBA, that's me.
Everyone likes gambling talk.
That's kind of been my little beat on Up Rocks and Dime, is whenever something happens that's in the handicapping world, I get a Slack message from somebody that says, "Hey, will you tell us what to do with this?" Because I'm sort of the degenerate around. So it's been a lot of fun, and I enjoy that kind of stuff. So that's you can bet at some point tomorrow, or I guess today as you're listening to this, I'll be tweeting about whatever the line is for the Thunder Hawks game whenever it comes out. So I'll be on top of that, and I'm sure the Thunder will be solidly favored in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I never bet because I just think it's unprofessional in my position to do it.
Absolutely.
Yes. But so I never do it. But plus I don't like the rush. Like when I play blackjack, I play blackjack once a year. At Summer League, I play blackjack once a year with all the bloggers.
I think I've seen this either last year or the year before. I think I've actually witnessed you play blackjack at some point.
Yeah, it's like all like the former True Hoop guys or some current go out and we play like blackjack, like Zach Harper and Andrew Hahn and like whomever else. And I end up playing blackjack. Like Hahn is like, you know, ends up, he was like, you know, he ends up peer pressuring me. And
I have been near Andrew Hahn at the blackjack table. So yeah, I can vouch for that 100%.
Yes. And I put down like not that much money. I buy him for, you know, $60 or something. And I play and I hate the rush. Like I hate the rush of gambling. Like that feeling that like people get addicted to that makes gambling addictive. I hate it.
And you're so much better for it. I'm telling you that right now. That be happy that you feel that way.
That's probably true. I hate it so much. So I don't ever gamble, but I love like I do a This year, I actually made it into a podcast I did with Josh Lloyd. I just did the over-under preseason podcast for all, like, the over-under for win totals.
Oh, yeah.
I love – I do a column on that every year. Like, I love looking at the lines. Like, I enjoy the process of like, what leads to the gambling. But the gambling stuff is just – that's not for me.
My tagline on the every single game tweet that I put out with the line, it ends with, if you enjoy that sort of thing. Because people don't always appreciate it. But I think Vegas is very smart, and it kind of can give you a little window into what the smart people think about the game. And it's not always – they're not always right. You know, if the Thunder are favored by 8 points, they're not going to win by 8 points every time. But at the same time, like, it gives you a little window, and people that are perhaps as smart or smarter than I am about what they think about the game. So it's just another extra thing there to keep some perspective. But I think you've chosen correctly in staying away from it.
Well, it's just fun to talk about.
Absolutely. Always.
It's fun to talk about. And I do agree with the NBA's assessment that it should be legal. Like, heck, if you can monitor it and they can make money off of it, you know, why not push for it to be legal? But that could, like, be its own, like, 12-part podcast.
Oh, for sure. And I fully agree with you, by the way, in short form, is that people are going to do it anyway. So if you can regulate it and, as you said, profit from it, that's definitely the best way to do it. I think Adam Silver understands that. So it's going to be happening, I think, fairly soon. Within the next 5 years, I think it's going to be you'll be allowed to gamble on the NBA. Even if you probably are already, you'll be actually allowed to do it instead of just kind of skirting the law like you are now.
I think that's a good prediction. And remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, just like all the other Locked On podcasts. You can head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. And I don't know if I said this at the start of the show. Normally I do. But you can log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out my blog, Thunder Road, to follow team coverage there and what's next for the Thunder. That does it for today. Brad, that was fun.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, for sure. But until next time, Locked On Thunder and Locked On Hawks are locking out.
Hi, I'm Paul. Verizon has been placing giant letters all over the country to get people to buy into their unlimited plan. Don't get hooked. Switch to Sprint Unlimited, $22.50 per month per line for 4 lines and get the 5th line free. Hurry to your local Sprint store, visit Sprint.com/unlimited, or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 today.
Savings until 10/31/18, then $38 per line per month for 5 lines with autopay, excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, streams, UDL, KHT 1080p, music to 1.5 megabits per second, gaming up to 8 megabits per second, subject to credit, $30 activation fee, prohibited network use, rules and data deprioritization apply compared to Verizon Beyond Unlimited. Carry features, different coverage and offer not everywhere. Restrictions apply.